The rumor was an update was coming from the Mounties today concerning those alleged killers from BC, their bodies found in northern Manitoba last week, and the rumor was right. A news release during the 4 o'clock hour had us scrambling in the newsroom to dissect and rewrite this RCMP news release, do breaking news, send out updates on our social media accounts. The update can be basically summed up with one sentence. The 18 and 19-year-old took their own lives. The RCMP writes the Manitoba Medical Examiner has completed the autopsies and has confirmed it is the suspects. It can also confirm the two died in what appears to be suicides by gunfire. The Mounties write while both individuals were deceased for a number of days before they were found, the exact time and date of their deaths not known. However, there are strong indications they had been alive for a few days since the last seen in July and during that extensive search effort that we covered in the Gillam region. Two guns were located with them. Now, forensic analysis, it's underway. They want to confirm that those weapons were the ones that are connected with the murders in BC. Those three deaths, you had that one gentleman as well, that couple, those tourists you recall from the U.S. and Australia, those three deaths. Investigators are now assessing all items located in Manitoba, along with the previous findings related to the three northern BC homicide investigations, in order to gain more clarity into what happened to the victims. The BC Mounties have also engaged their behavioral analysis unit. And police say once they've completed that review within the next few weeks, we will be providing the families with an update, and then they will release that information publicly. So then, as today, it will come to us and we'll bring it to you.
Interesting how much of a, and you know, not often do we figure out how the sausage is made when it comes to law enforcement, but it's an interesting process that they have to go through. I mean, even still calling them murder suspects at this point, and you know, doing that dance, figuring out whether or not these are the actual murder weapons or the suicide weapons, I guess, in this capacity. All of that's really interesting to me.
Especially if they ditch the guns in some capacity. That's what I'm interested to see, because you can never truly will have that definitive evidence. I mean, everybody knows it's them. But to find that definitive evidence, the guns that were on them were used
were those
in these
the
murders,
ones? Yeah.
Would that be enough to then say, okay, well, we think they're guilty? We all think so, but it's different with policing and with the letter of the law.
We spoke with Chris Lewis, former OPP commissioner and public safety analyst for our partners at CTV, and he seemed surprised that it was suicide. I kind of got that from him, that, you know, he seemed surprised that this was the way that they went out, given, you know, a lot of the time we see people wait for the cops to arrive and go out in their own blaze of glory that way.
It's funny because throughout the newsroom, and I think throughout many individuals talking about it with their friends and family, many assumed that they had taken their own lives pretty early on. So it's interesting to hear that that was his take on it. One of the debates we had in the newsroom, it may sound trivial, but was the aspect of, did one shoot the other?
Yeah.
They don't talk about
suicide.
Was it the bullet wounds? Was it an assisted suicide? One shoots one, then takes his own life. Was it, I mean, I'm not trying to be add humor to it, but it's the aspect of, did it just count down and you both shoot at the same time?
Well, that's interesting. And why did they decide on this particular place? I mean, was this where they knew the end of the road had happened? Were they hearing the helicopters above?
Yeah.
Did they hide from the police? You know,
I find
at some
that
point?
To be the interesting part of the story. Last week when we were chatting about it on air, about the fact that the bodies were found, to me it seems just so incomplete, because we didn't know at that time if they had just died in the woods or if this what they had closed the chapter themselves. And so I'm interested in, again, this, I mean, you try to balance the fact that, like, I just want to know all the details with what is actually responsible in terms of what's being able to be shared, because I actually want to know how they actually reached that point. And again, was it a helicopter over top and they realized this is the end, or is this, did they have a pact? What, like, things that we'll never know.
Were they listening to the radio? Were they following along? Oh, they're in the Gillam region. We can hear the helicopters. Yeah. Where are we going to go from here? It's as remote as it comes. And to add another aspect, you're referring to that. No mention of any note. Still nothing that they gave any indication, any sort of closure for the families and to some extent Canadians to know what, how did and why did this happen.
This was all released today in a written statement by the
That's
RCMP,
right,
where the others have all been press conferences that they've had.
That's right. We thought, I mean, we sort of expected a news conference because they've been really great in that area, but this is sometimes how it works. They just send out the news release. And
yeah, their news conferences have been right on time at 3 o'clock, almost. You could set your watch to them.
Yeah, and it's in, and this is BC RCMP, so I'm not sure if that has changed the element of it as opposed to the Mounties in Manitoba, a different approach. BC, it's more, I mean, you get different departments, you get different approaches. Some just want, they don't want to talk to the media, so they send out the news release, and now we wait for the next one. That hopefully that confirmation it was the guns that were beside them that were they were used, and maybe even a few more answers as to why, if they can piece something together.
Not a lot of why when it comes to this local story.
Have you guys watched it?
Oh yeah.
So there's a video out there, and we'll call it viral. It's going viral as we speak. It's in Nathan Phillips Square today, next to the welcoming Toronto sign, no less. A woman decides to go on a racist tirade.
Get the home. Go home! This is the place of men, not for You don't belong here. Get the home! You can't spit on my country!
Now, you might think by listening to that this was some woman that maybe wasn't of sound mind, or maybe you would jump to a homeless scenario. No, this is a woman in a dress. She's holding a Vote Andrew Scheer sign. Anybody walk by, you would think, oh, look at that lady. She's dressed so nice, and vote for Andrew Scheer. Just went off for some reason. She actually uses the N-word at one point. She actually spits at the man recording that video. It's only 24 seconds long, so we really don't have the whole picture on how did this come to be. It's no one really, I don't believe, starts at that point. Not that, however, it started would justify such a reaction.
No, and I mean, you know, it's always one of those things where you want to know a little bit more. You want to know, you know, how did this start? Why did she pick this individual? Why did this individual feel the need to start filming? Were there earlier threats?
She talks about him spitting on the country, and then she goes at the end to say spit, something about spit again. So I don't know what element this individual had. Was there some way that he walked by and said, forget Andrew Scheer, and spit on the ground in front of her? And once again, none of this is a justification for just how vile she was. Now, we called police and said, have you heard about this? And they called us back, and they said, yeah, she's under arrest. She will be in court tomorrow. We can't tell you her charges because she hasn't appeared yet, but charges are on the way, and we'll have that update tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be following this story.
Absolutely.
It's curious. Again, another story that's got a lot of questions around it. And why the Andrew Scheer sign? And now, is it a stunt? Is it somebody who's, you know, maybe working for one of the other teams out there? Who knows? That's all a possibility.
That's the stuff I wonder, too. Isn't that interesting? I was thinking that you feel so conspiracy theorist sometimes in this field, but you start to think that, well, if one party decide to send out someone to say things like this and hold a certain sign to as if undermine that group, I mean, what?
That was my thought when I was telling Ryan when I first saw it. It seemed
staged.
It seemed staged at the start until she started being incredibly violent with her language and then spit in the person's face. At that point, I was like, "That you mean?" Again, I've worked in politics. Like, I get some of the gotcha, the gimmicks that happen on camera. That is way across any line that I think a lot of parties would subscribe to.
Well, no, the only thing I would agree is to say, no matter how much you're in favor of the conservatives or the liberals, would you go to jail for such a cause? I don't believe anybody
in
would.
In Canada, slap on the wrist? No, there's not going to be a lot of jail time attached to this.
But the infamy now for her.
I know. But again, it's even like the Toronto sign.
That's the weird part, too. It's like this welcoming place where people, tourists
come.
It's
so busy. Yeah.
Well, that's my point. Like, and again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist on any of this, but it's politics. The world gets dirty. Yeah. There's a lot of people around there. There's a lot of cameras, likely more so than if you were just off on some street corner somewhere.
But as we often do, we try to apply rationale to
something that might
actually.
Yeah,
but this is also where so many, like the pro life people with the really really intense like billboards, like it is a gathering spot of the city. Same thing with Dundas Square. You get a lot of people from all walks of life. Some with some pretty aggressive, violent sort of things to pitch. They naturally go to these big gathering spots in the city.
Yeah, like the Jesus Saves guy.
That's right.
He's up there all the time.
Naked like, cowboy.
What's he save? Like a RSP's advertising or something like that? Let's talk about the prime minister.
Well, this was actually the big story up to a certain point. Then it all came down in 4 o'clock hour. But the prime minister, he has a meeting scheduled with Toronto Mayor John Tory tomorrow to talk about a number of things. And among those, yes, the surge in shootings we have seen in this city.
I look forward to sitting down with Mayor Tory tomorrow to talk about this and other issues and how the federal government can help with the city of Toronto and indeed communities across the country as they grapple with gun violence.
The mayor, though, took a little wind out of those sails. He has a little extra giddy up because he got the cast off today. Remember his Achilles problem. But he revealed this afternoon all three levels of government have provided additional funding for Toronto police to tackle gun violence and keep communities safe. So it's an additional $4.5 million in total. The government's agreed to provide the funding to immediately support police efforts to keep communities safe and help redouble efforts to prevent criminal activity and combat the activities of street gangs. Now, the police chief will outline the department's plans. We're being told it's in the coming days. He was out with a statement. He talks about how we know most gun violence is directly connected to street gang activity. Toronto police will have a comprehensive plan. Well, they have one, actually, to address these issues we're facing, and now he has the money. And he's going to launch that services plan in the coming days. Together, we will create safer spaces. So we went to our crime specialist, guy who knows something about this, former lead homicide detective in Toronto, Mark Mendelson. What do you believe this money might be spent on?
At the outset, we will see a greater uniform presence. I think some of that money will be used for overtime, both for uniform and to be able to inject more officers into these specialized units.
And that's what we've seen in the past. We've seen it before. It's the optics of it, not only to the public, but to the street gang members as well. More police officers out patrolling. Hopefully they climb back into their holes they came from. The public feels safer. They see more police cars. The numbers go down a bit. And look, we fixed it until there's the resurgence at some point.
Now, I'm guessing we're going to be sending reporters to both whatever the chief has to say at some point and to what the politicians have to say. I'm guessing they're taking questions tomorrow. I'm also assuming that there's going to be instructions. Get specifics from these people. That's important, right?
Yeah, because that's the conversation we keep having. And it becomes so... It's a broken telephone. So I've said this a million times. If there was an answer, Chicago would have figured it out by now, and they can't. So what is the great answer to this? As we said last week, beyond just a lot of police officers standing on street corners that you don't want to break the law because they're right there.
Well, and that's the thing. Remember, after every sort of like large crime incident, whether a terrorist attack, whatever, like the next day, I mean, you're not going to have another one hit the exact same spot. But all of a sudden, there's a ton of police officers there and everyone goes about their day and feel like, okay, we're safe, we're feeling good. And I feel like that's sort of what this is about as well, is you're tossing some money at it. Is this, you're actually coming up with a structural response, something that you're actually going to implement into the Toronto Police Service for years to come? Or is this something you just throw it at just so a lot of us forget or a lot of us feel a little bit more comfortable going about our day? And that's what I'm interested to find out in the next few days.
I think it's column B there, but you hope for the best.
And I was saying, you know, the fall comes in month and a half from now. I know it's hard to believe when it's 28 degrees outside, but I know. I'm a fun killer.
Yeah. Football, though.
Buzzkill.
But, you know, that's when the shootings start to go down. That's when the numbers start to go down. So you can really rag the puck on this with a big novelty check if you wanted to.
It's true.
And that's why our jobs are to keep people's feet to the fire, make sure we're getting some concrete action on all of this.
And we will. We'll ask
I know you will.
We'll ask those questions.
Because you're in charge in that room. You and Kim are going to put the screws to your
right.
team, right?
Let's go.
That's how you do things. Another gun story, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of gun stuff. I'm sorry, but it was a week ago. It was about 2 a.m. Gunfire inside a nightclub located in the Finch and Keel area. Four people hit by bullets, they survived. Now, police have announced an arrest today. So on Saturday, police raided a home, Jane and Lawrence neighborhood, busted a 30-year-old guy. So 8 charges against him. What's noteworthy is not the charge. We don't see any charges about attempted murder, about hitting those people with bullets. Now, that's the aspect of they're dealing with the weapon right now. They do have them on these charges. And two that stood out, knowingly manufacture firearm, knowingly manufacture ammunition. And that stood out because we did a story in the past about how some street gang members are essentially MacGyvering guns. They're coming up with ways to create their own. So we spoke with Chris Williams. He's a firearms expert, private investigator, and he tells News Talk 1010, after looking at photos, that he thinks the gun that police seized from the suspect is actually a starter's pistol or a blank firing pistol. And blanks may have been modified as well.
The metallurgical components and the metallurgical quality of a legitimate firearm and a blank firing pistol are vastly different. I wouldn't want to be on either holding one or, you know, certainly being on the receiving end of one. I mean, these are not particularly quality firearms, but, you know, they will still injure, they will still maim and still have the potential to kill.
But that there's the bottom line. They're just finding ways. They hollow them out. They put projectiles in these blank bullets in these. And it even talks about 80% kits. Apparently, you can go online through certain places. You can almost buy an entire gun, at least all the parts for it. You just can't get the handle. But you can get 80% of the way there to killing someone through loopholes in the system.
Which, you know, then begs the question, what good is that ban if people can DIY a firearm?
Oh, a starter's pistol.
Yeah.
I mean, who knew? I guess it makes sense. They're very similar, but they've still found a way.
Of course. They'll always find a way. That's what criminals do, right? Ryan Doyle, Trevor Mayo with you here on The Rush this afternoon. Dave McKee is here with his views on the news. Scary stuff out of Markham.
Another shooting. See, right on cue. All this talk about shooting. We have one not in Toronto this time, but this one in Markham. It appears to have been a home invasion. Happened in a residential neighborhood. It's called Boxwood Crescent. That's in the Markham Road 14th area. if you check, you know, we always do. We go to Google Maps and check the street view, which is a wonderful invention for us. You can see a lot of nice two-story homes there, two-car garages. Looks just like a nice little residential area. You'd see anywhere in the GTA. One man was shot inside one of those homes. Injuries described as life-threatening. Two suspects seen fleeing in a dark-colored vehicle. Well, that narrows it down. No answers yet about a motive, because this will all come down to. Was it targeted? I think most say, well, you got yourself into some stuff, and now you're paying the price. If it was random, that's when things get even that much more serious.
We'll just move right on from. We talked a lot about shootings, but I know a lot of people were talking about this story this past weekend.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I heard this. The autopsy, it's done, but no details yet on how Jeffrey Epstein died. The U.S. Attorney General, though, saying this today.
We are now learning of serious irregularities at this facility that are deeply concerning and demand a thorough investigation.
The facility he speaks of, where Epstein allegedly took his own life, a federal penitentiary in Lower Manhattan. The billionaire waiting trials, we've all heard, sex trafficking charges, and there's speculation his client list may have some very powerful names on it. The attorney general says he was angry to learn staffers at the jailhouse had failed to adequately secure his prisoner or this prisoner. He was supposed to be on suicide watch. And he also adds,
any co-conspirators should not rest easy. The victims deserve justice, and they will get it.
Now, it's expected that authorities will turn their attention now to the team of recruiters, his employees, who allegedly knew about Epstein's desire for underage girls and essentially assisted him, lined up victims for him. And if any Epstein, get this, if any Epstein assistants hope to avoid charges, maybe they thought, oh, I'll get myself out of this. I will testify against him. That goes out the window now.
That's right. I never even thought of that.
No
deal.
That's
a great point. There would be no deals.
Nope.
So you're on your own.
Good.
In that circuit. And good. Yeah, absolutely.
Rightly so.
There was a lot of speculation online about this man's death because too high profile. We all knew that he may have tried something like this. How this happens, I don't know, but something isn't right here. I don't think for a second that we're getting the full story.
Something stinks. And
yeah.
I don't know if you read the article from last week. I was reading it today where one of a gentleman who'd been in and out of this correctional facility sort of outlined how these rooms work. And he says, there's nowhere to hang yourself. There's no door handle. Mm-hmm. There's nothing hanging from the ceiling. You know, you can't move the bed. It's low to the ground. That he called it impossible.
There's no sprinklers.
Yeah,
right?
They take the sprinkler heads off. So you can't even swallow something. Like these rooms are really difficult to self-harm in. I mean, there's a lot of complicated things, right? Like that his roommate was transferred out before. The fact that, you mean, the watches were not done at the intervals they were supposed to. And if he was on suicide watch, they would have been constant, right? But even at the 15 to 30 minute intervals, those were not happening as well. So, it's really fishy. If something shady didn't happen, it is just shows an absolute unbelievable breakdown in the system as well for someone so high profile that they could actually self-harm.
But it's those list of clients, right?
Absolutely.
It's his buddies. It's the, can I see in the realm of possibility, some billionaire with links to organized crime said, this guy's got to go away and made it happen? Absolutely.
Sure. And I don't think that thing is, that what you just described is that much out of the movies.
No.
I think
yeah.
that's real life.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you talk about somebody with that much money, right? And the people around him, the well-connected people around him with that much money. It'll be interesting to see what this autopsy says. Another story out of Markham.
Yeah, Benny, a sphincter just tightened at the Pacific Mall in Markham. You can just say, with word, a federal court has ruled a woman who sold counterfeit luxury goods in the GTA, she must pay damages. So that money is going to go towards well-known brands, including Dior and Louis Vuitton. The woman who ran an unregistered business, it was named TBF Accessories. She sold, well, what do they usually sell? Handbags, apparel, out of multiple locations, including even a home in Toronto. Now, she argued her merchandise, it differed from the luxury goods, and reasonably informed people, they would not confuse them. The judge, after he stopped laughing, said, that defense has no hope of success whatsoever. So he dismissed other potential issues that could necessitate a trial. He says the only genuine issue, how much the companies deserve in the way of restitution, which could be decided by a trial or a court-appointed individual, so he selected the latter. The plaintiffs will be allowed to decide, do they want damages, or maybe they want the profits arising from the copyright infringements. She'll have to pay a portion of their legal costs as well.
Geez.
She's going to be broke if she has any money left. No word on whether she'll pay with counterfeit bills.
That's good. I never understand people who want knockoff anything. Because you could, first of all, you can tell. Most of the time you can tell. Like, so what's the, why would you want a Rolex?
Right. I've gone shopping on Canal Street in Manhattan. And I loved it. And then it fell apart like one day later.
That's what I don't understand. Like, why would you waste your money when you know it's not real?
I know, you feel good for like 30 seconds walking around. Yeah. Like, no one will know.
Yeah, it's true. And it's interesting to see what they have, because some of it you think, I mean, look at this Lacoste. I remember one time I was there. I bought a legitimate Lacoste polo. I wanted one, bought one downtown.
Was it an alligator or a crocodile? Yeah. It's a dead giveaway.
Well, then you go to the ones that are fake, and they look the same. Yeah. And there are $16 as opposed to 54 Americans. So you start to think, well, it's so much cheaper, but you're right, it falls apart in seconds.
I've done the sunglasses before when I'm traveling. There's always the guy on the beach that comes by with like the whole rack of like the Ray-Bans. Mm-hmm. And like they don't
look. You
mean
Ray-Bans?
Like, yeah, yeah. So like, I've picked up a few of those before, but like those, like the lens pop out like after a few days, like they're not legit. Yeah. But I have some of them in my house.
But you're not going to somebody's house to go shopping.
No.
Like this woman allegedly was selling stuff out of her home.
Well, that was my experience in Canal Street, too. We went up through seedy back alley. We went up the stairs. We get to the top. Suddenly, we're up in this room where all the knockoff handbags are. This guy closes and locks the door, bolts the door. Everybody's freaking out, and I'm thinking, they're about to rob us. No, there was a cop spotted in the region, and they were all freaking out and filling their garbage bags full of handbags so they could go out the back door.
See, the experience of that is way more exciting than the actual product
that you get.
That's
true. It was a great story. And there, all along, my ex-wife was still there, like, I'll take this one and this one. Okay, lady, just give me money and go.
Love this. One of the best watches I ever owned was a Folex. Kept better time than my Bulova. Okay. Let's end with sleep.
Yeah, you get to blame your parents for everything. Your hairline, your inability to maintain a healthy relationship. No, just me. And even, it appears, your sleep cycle. A new study shows there could be a genetic explanation why some people are wide awake at 5 a.m. and others can barely get up at 9. Researchers have found a mutated gene that runs in families and affects what's known as advanced sleep phase. People affected by it, they're early risers, but they rarely consult a sleep doctor because their employers, their teachers, they don't complain, right? They feel like they get more done in the morning, so they don't really ever just say, well, why am I awake so early? They just sort of embrace it. I actually find early risers usually are still in good shape. It's almost like they just don't need as much sleep.
Yeah, and I think it varies, and this explains a lot as to why it varies from person to person. You know, a lot of successful people that are up at 5 in the morning that only need 5 hours of sleep.
Yep. I'm doomed. My dad wakes up at 4 a.m. every single day to like do crosswords and read the paper. So like I am doomed.
Are you an early riser yourself?
I would not call myself an early riser. I'm up pretty late generally, and I've come home like when I was younger when my dad was up. So like we don't necessarily align as of yet. So if this is what's to come and the science backs it up, I'm in for a world of hurt.
Yeah, it's a preview at this point in time.
Buy some Sudoku now.
Yeah. Can't get this number right. Where does this go? Dave McKee,
thanks,
always
guys.
A pleasure, sir. Cheers. With his views on the news every day at 6 o'clock. When we continue here on The Rush, we're going to take a little look at, well, etiquette, really, and what you do with your shoes. We'll explain. It's coming. Trust me. As The Rush continues.